Welcome to Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hi, this is David Maister, and this is Lessons I've Learned. This particular series is on how to develop your business through marketing, client service, and client relationships. In this, the 10th podcast in the series of 14, we will turn to the topic of how new clients go about buying services from new providers. This episode is called How Clients Choose and is based upon a chapter in my book, Managing the Professional Service Firm. In previous episodes in this series, we've looked at marketing to existing clients, but we now turn our attention to marketing to new clients. It turns out that the single most important talent in selling professional services is the ability to understand the purchasing process, not the sales process, and understand it from the client's perspective. The better you can learn to think like a client about how they buy, the easier it will be to do and say the correct things to get hired. Fortunately, this is not difficult. Each of us have been through the process of retaining other professionals. Lawyers retain accountants, actuaries hire consultants, and public relations counselors, like the rest of us, need tax advice. Every one of us can deepen our understanding of what's really going on in the buying process by drawing upon our own experiences as a client. We traditionally tend to view our practice development task as divided into two stages: marketing, generating the lead, and selling, converting a lead into a sale. But what happens when you consider it from the buyer's perspective? These two stages now become qualification and selection. First, I, as the client, try to reduce the large number of possible firms and professionals that might be considered down to the set of those that I judge to be qualified. In this qualification stage, I consider such facts as who have you worked for and what are your capabilities and what depth of personnel do you have and how good are your references. Except in the most unusual of circumstances, however, where the problem is so complex and high risk that there's only one viable candidate in the country, even the most thorough of this due diligence, examination of available facts and references, usually ends up with more than one firm or individual that is technically qualified to handle my problem. 99% of the time, after exhausting my abilities as a client to make technical distinctions and logical analyses, I'm still left with a choice of reputable firms with good references, all eminently capable of solving my problem. This leads to an important but surprising conclusion. If the most thorough qualification always results with a choice still to be made, then unless their skills are truly unique, unmatched by any competitor, professionals are never actually chosen because of their technical capabilities. Excellent capabilities are essential to get you into the final set to be considered, but it is other things that get you hired. Once I've decided which firms I will consider in the final set, it turns out my focus of inquiry shifts significantly. I'm no longer asking, can you do it? I know you can. But now I'm asking is, do I want to work with you? I'm no longer interested in the institutional characteristics of your firm, but I'm now trying to form a judgment about you. By the fact that you are sitting here talking to me, you can assume you've successfully marketed your firm. Now the time has come to sell yourself. Let's explore. What does it feel like really to be a buyer? Buying professional services is rarely a comfortable experience. Among the unpleasant emotions frequently felt are the following. First, I feel like I'm taking a personal risk. By hiring anyone, I'm putting my affairs or my company's affairs in the hands of somebody else, and I have to give up some control over my future or my company's future. This is my area of responsibility, and even though intellectually I may know I need outside expertise, emotionally it's not comfortable to put my affairs in the hands of other people. Even if the matter's relatively routine, I will need convincing, beyond just protestations of good intentions, that my problem will receive prompt and serious attention from you. I also feel insecure. Since I find it hard to detect when I'm a buyer which of you is the genius and who's just good, I'm going to have to commit myself without feeling totally confident about my decision. What is more, I usually don't know yet if I've got a simple problem or a complex one. That's why I need you, the specialist, to help me. But I'm not sure I can trust you to be honest about that. After all, it's in your interest to convince me it's complex. You professionals are always making mountains out of molehills. Nothing is ever easy. A third common feeling when I'm the buyer is that I'm skeptical. I've been burned before by a lot of you people. I get a lot of promises. So how do I know whose promise I should buy? Will you be one of those typical professionals who are hard to get hold of, who are patronizing, who leave you out of the loop, who befuddle you with jargon, who don't explain what they're going to do or why? You get the idea. In short, will you deal with me in the way I want to be dealt with? Now notice, what I invite you to think about is these are the questions that you and I have when we are buying. We also, to a degree, feel exposed. Whoever you and I hire, we're going to have to reveal some proprietary secrets about our affairs, not all of which are flattering. I'm also a little threatened. You will be working on things for which I'm responsible. After all, marketing consultants are hired by the VP of marketing, lawyers are hired by the general counsel, actuaries by the benefit manager. By the very fact of suggesting improvements or changes, there is the risk that you will uncover things that I haven't been doing right up till now. Which raises an interesting question. Are you going to be my ally or my enemy? Are you going to criticize me? What all of this reveals is that among the best set of qualified candidates, I'm looking for the one I can trust. The act of hiring a professional is by very definition an act of faith. I must inevitably believe a promise. In selecting a professional, I'm not just buying a service, I'm entering into a relationship. So, your selling task is to earn my trust and confidence, with an emphasis on the word earn. So what are buyers like you and me look for? How am I to determine with which candidate I want to have a relationship? Certainly the answer is not contained in the promises you make. Talk's cheap. Someone who says to me, "Trust me, will show a special interest in you," is not likely to win my confidence simply by that assertion. Inevitably, even if I view myself as a sophisticated buyer, I'm forced to rely on clues obtained through the interview process in order to guess at what kind of person you are. My impressions and perceptions are created by small actions that turn out to be meaningful for their symbolism, for what they reveal about you. How you behave during the interview or the proposal process will be taken as a proxy for how you will deal with me after I retain you. Unlike the process of qualification, which is rational, logical, and based on facts, it turns out that the selection stage, as done by you and me, is mostly intuitive, personal, and based on impressions. The first thing that will catch my attention is your preparation. There is little so off-putting than someone who begins the meeting by asking me some basic facts about my company or the situation that they could have found out in advance. It not only reveals laziness, but makes me feel like one more cold call who you don't have a special interest in. You're on a fishing expedition trying to drum up some revenues, and it's so obvious and it doesn't work. On the other hand, someone who can say, "I noticed from your annual report that you recently opened a new plant in Podunk. What has that meant for your department?" has really caught my attention. It may not have been that intellectually challenging to read my annual report, but it does show you do your homework. It tells me something about you. The point can be taken further, for preparation is your opportunity to demonstrate initiative. Why not contact my industry association and get some comparison of my company's public data with that of my competitors? It will help you ask me more substantive questions and will demonstrate your willingness to earn my business. If you want to bring along some printed materials, I'll be a lot less impressed by your pre-printed brochure than something that has clearly been put together for me. At least that will show a little thought and consideration. Professionals who are over-eager to impress and thereby spend the whole meeting talking about their accomplishments, what their firm has done, and why they are qualified to help me, come across as insensitive to me, my company, and my situation. Think about it. How do you feel when somebody who's trying to get your business talks all the time about themselves? It sounds like what it is, a standard spiel reflecting no special interest in me. I don't want to hear about you and your firm. I want you to talk about me and my situation. The only way to influence me is to find out what I want and show me how to get it. That's what Dale Carnegie once said. I hate to be sold, but I may be willing to buy if you can show me that I and my company have some problems to solve or some opportunities to capture. Getting me to acknowledge that there is an opportunity or a problem won't necessarily be easy, because remember, I'm suspicious of your motives. First, you must make me feel comfortable. Perhaps ask me what's going well. Give me some new information. Tell me what my competition is up to. Tell me what you've been doing for other companies like mine. Find a way to be helpful to me. You've got to give a favor to get a favor, and there's no better way to win my trust than to be helpful to me right from the beginning at your first sales call. Someone who brings me new ideas and suggestions without pressuring me comes across as someone who's really trying to help and isn't here just to ratchet up their own sales billable hours. If I'm your prospect, treat me as if I were already a client. Give me an education. Tell me about the alternative ways the common problems of my industry might be dealt with. Help me understand the advantages and disadvantages of some of the things I've been reading about. Ask me about how I'm doing things now, and use that as an opportunity to help me understand some options I may have for doing things differently. Tell me something I didn't know. If I walk away from the meeting saying, "That was interesting, I hadn't thought of that," you've won. I may or may not hire you today, but I certainly want to talk to you again. Don't be afraid to float high-risk ideas early. Just an idea. Demonstrate your creativity. Remember, I discount all your assertions about your expertise until you give me some evidence to back them up. For example, don't tell me about your experience in my industry or on a particular topic. Rather, illustrate it by asking questions that reveal your knowledge. Reveal your knowledge of key industry terminology, facts and figures, or latest events. That way, I'll draw my own conclusions, which, by the way, I'm going to do anyway, about how well you understand my business and my issues. While I want you to know my industry, don't patronize me by trying to tell me what's going on in my business. Instead of saying, "Here's the three most important things happening in your industry," I may think that you're pretending to know more than I do. Say something like, "Our experience says that these are the three most important things. Do you agree?" If I agree with you, fine. If I disagree, we can have a conversation. To avoid coming across as arrogant, patronizing, and pompous, which is common experience with you professionals, try to turn your assertions into questions. By doing so, you convert possible signs of assertiveness into evidence that you'll respect my opinions, involve me in the thinking process, and are sensitive to the need for a congenial relationship. Your manner of speech, how you choose to phrase your sentences, tells me something about how you deal with clients. Make our meeting a conversation. Don't talk all the time, but similarly, don't grill me. Show a sympathetic understanding of my role in my company. Understand who I report to, how I'm measured, what my budgets are. By asking me about these things, I'll believe you're treating me as a person, not just as a purchasing agent, and I promise you, I respond much better to that. This doesn't mean I want you to wine and dine me or try and win my business by becoming my friend. It does mean that I want you to be sensitive to the fact that your prospective client, me, is a person, not a corporate entity. Don't start telling me how you can solve my problems until I've acknowledged that there's a problem or an opportunity here. Simply asserting to me that I have problems isn't enough. If you say it, I can and will doubt you. If you can get me to say it, then it'll be true. The key talent in good selling is being good at getting me, the client, to reveal my problems, my needs, my wants, my concerns. As the old saying going, if I'm talking, telling you about my company and my needs, you're ahead. If you're talking, you're losing. Just like they taught us in sales school, professionals talk too much. Ask good questions and listen. As you try to get me talking about my problems, demonstrate your sensitivity. I don't respond well to somebody who asks me right up front, "What are your problems?" That's too assertive, and you haven't yet earned the right to an answer. Similarly, don't ask me, "What's not going well?" I'm not going to answer that. But I might answer, "What don't you have time for?" I can answer that one without feeling too uncomfortable. While I'm unlikely to tell you my problems, I may be willing to acknowledge problems you already know about. For example, ask me why we do things the way we do and why we haven't tried certain options. Instead of asking, "What problems do you have with that way of doing things?" say, Some of our other clients who do things the way you do have had to contend with the following issues as a result. What have you done to deal with these consequences? That question gives you an opportunity to show that you are familiar with my type of situation and it doesn't confront or challenge me. If I do begin to show an interest in a given issue, your next task is to convince me, or get me to convince myself, that the issue is big enough to bother with. Remember, I don't like working with professionals and I probably never will, and I only do so when I have to. So I'll only proceed if I'm convinced that the benefit is big enough and certain enough, which are two separate things, to justify the expense, discomfort, and disruption of using you. Before I want to hear how you solve my problem, you need to get me to agree that it's worth solving. Your most productive tactic here is to ask me, how valuable would it be if... and then complete that sentence by describing some future state of affairs that you can get me to. Help me picture in my mind the benefits I'd receive by reaching that state of affairs. If you can get me excited about the possible benefits of a future state, not by asserting them, but by getting me to admit that they would be desirable, I will then want to know more about how you can get me there. If I don't acknowledge the benefit, nothing else you'll say will be of any interest to me. If I'm still with you, interested in maybe proceeding, I may ask you how you would go about handling my affairs. Don't rush to give me a singular concrete answer as to your firm's approach. That approach may be one I'm not interested in. For example, as I've discussed in another episode in this series, maybe I want the permanent fix and maybe you're selling the quick fix or vice versa. The key here is to give me options, help me understand their advantages and disadvantages, and let me choose. If you tell me your firm's approach, it will always strike me as standardized. By educating me as to alternative ways of proceeding, I get value from the education and the feeling that you're treating me as special. I am left with a sense that you're the type of professional who will respect my judgment and involve me. Recognize that it's unlikely that I'm going to say yes or no in front of you. I'm going to consult before I make a decision, so don't pressure me. Don't try any closing techniques on me. Give me reasons and reasoning that I can use when I in fact do consult with my superiors and colleagues. Instead of reaching for a sale every meeting, make your objective one of making progress in our relationship. Maybe I'll agree to meet one of your specialist partners, or consent to provide additional information to you, or provide access to one of my other executives. This is an idea called making an advance and is found in the book Spin Selling by Neil Rackham. Perhaps I'll participate in one of your seminars or agree to an additional, more focused meeting. Any one of these should be taken as a success. If you try to rush me, I'll take it as a sign that you are more interested in making a sale than in helping me. And you know what? That'll backfire on you. I may ask you to submit a proposal, but never forget that since my ultimate decision is based on who I trust, the sale will be made in the face-to-face time that we spend together. The vast majority of professional projects are awarded at the pre-proposal stage. The formal proposal and or the presentation merely confirm or destroy a decision that's already been made. If you can't afford to spend the time in contact up front, don't bother writing the proposal. Here's what I want if I ask you to make a presentation. Sit down, distribute materials in advance, and say, let's go through them together. Don't lower the lights, put up your slides, stand up and walk me through your canned speech. Quite honestly, it makes me feel I'm being lectured to. If I want to ask about something, don't say, we'll get to that. It makes me feel like you're inflexible. If I interrupt you, deal with my question. I want to see how you handle yourself when I ask a question, not judge how practiced you are at your standard spiel. Most of you rehearse your presentations, but rehearse the wrong things. I'm not looking for how smoothly you can get through your practice presentation. That's not what influences my decision. Rather, I give great weight to how flustered you get when I ask hard questions. Flunk that test, and I'm not sure you're the one I want to trust. What you should be rehearsing are your responses to my questions. I want you to prove that you can listen by picking up on my comments, adapting in real time to what you say to what I've just said. Involve me. Ask what I think. I know someone's listening to me when they show the ability to depart from their prepared scripts and base their subsequent comments on what I've just said. If you don't have the talent to depart from your script when I throw a curveball, and be sure I'm going to, then why should I believe in your abilities to handle my complex affairs? When I challenge you with an objection, hear it out and don't interrupt. Don't tell me I shouldn't be concerned about that objection. I've just told you I am concerned. Acknowledge what I said as a valid concern. As they say in the books, I'll let you rephrase and soften it, but make sure you check for my acceptance of your rephrasing. Then give me an answer and ask me whether I accept your answer. Don't try to survive the moment by waffling and moving on. You may get out of the uncomfortable moment, but I'm going to be left with the feeling that you didn't answer my question. And that means I don't trust you. I'll be impressed if you've clearly anticipated me and thought of that objection or concern before. It shows me that you've taken the time to see things from my perspective. So predict my objections and practice your responses as part of your preparation. On such things as sales won or lost. So, let's summarize. There's an old joke about doctors that they get fascinated with the disease but could care less about the patient. Unfortunately, this attitude is all too prevalent in a wide variety of professions. Too many professionals get overly focused on technical matters and lose sight of the essential relationship nature of professional transactions. This doesn't mean that technical skill is irrelevant in selling. Of course, it's critical. But having technical skills is only a necessary condition for success, not a sufficient one. Above all else, what I look for at the hiring stage, at the selection stage, is that rare professional who has both technical skill and a sincere desire to be helpful, to work with me and work with my problem. The key is empathy, the ability to enter my world and see it through my eyes. I'm David Maister, and this has been Lessons I've Learned.
This concludes another episode of David Maister's podcast series, Marketing Professional Services. Watch for the next series, Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors, beginning April 17th.